Hello, this is Katie and Melissa.
Hi, Katie and Melissa. How are you?
Good. Is this Rick?
How you doing down there?
Doing great. We're freezing. Where are you?
Oh, I'm up here in New York City, so I'm kind of cold myself.
You're freezing as well. Yeah.
I got to just say, and I have no embarrassment in saying this in front of one of my really good friends and stuff, I love you. And
oh, that's so nice.
I cannot believe that in all these years I've been in radio in Atlanta for 35 years, we've never talked before. So I'm so excited speaking to you.
Oh,
yeah,
I know. You don't do this very often because I've been writing about music for 20-something years and we've never spoken before either. So Katie and I are very excited.
Psyched to talk to
you
today.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. That's so nice.
Yes.
And well, I'll be there tomorrow, you know.
When you do these appearances at the various Wentworth galleries, do you typically have some time to come in to spend in the city?
Yeah, I do, actually. Not much, though. It's usually just a day or two. So I've been to Atlanta.
You have? Have you ever spent any amount of time here?
Well, no, not beyond the amount of time it takes to tour. But I know it was always one of my favorite cities. I mean, it was always like, oh, great, we're going to Atlanta.
But you've never spent much time here. I remember seeing you back, I think it was 81, at the Omni here.
Oh.
Actually wearing a pair of yellow pants. I really am so proud of that picture of myself. But we go way back. And honestly, you are a Renaissance man. I had no idea about your art. I think I would have assumed that you might have done it because of the videos. But wow, I love it. I love your artwork.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, I've been doing it for a really long time. It's like one of those things you do, but you never bring out. Because I never thought, sometimes if I produce a band, I'd give them something I was drawing while they were working. But I just kept things for, I don't know what reason. I never had any intentions of showing it or even doing anything with it, really, except kind of just, leaving it in a pile. But I didn't want to throw stuff away because it did take work and that's it. So that's why it never really came out until I did a couple of gallery shows in Manhattan. And then some people saw that and then some people wanted to Wentworth wanted to put it in galleries. And I thought, oh, that's different. Geez, I better try it. All right, I'll try that.
When was that you started doing the couple of gallery shows in Manhattan?
Well, in Manhattan, probably a few years ago. I did one at a gallery called Sanders Gallery, which is in Brooklyn. And I did one in Manhattan, and I also did one in Columbus, Ohio. And then I didn't do any for a while, and then Christian Wentworth showed up, and here we are.
What's it like for you interacting with people to talk about your art? Because I would guess it's different than, you know, being a performer on stage, because it's a much more intimate experience, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a different thing to talk about, because art's a pretty quiet thing when you think about it. It's really just a visual thing. I don't know how much you can really say about it. You know, I'm not like an art historian or anything, and I don't even really follow art that much. I mean, my favorite art's always been pop art and also maybe abstract impressionism a little bit. But this sounds funny, but I never actually thought of myself as being an artist that draws. I just thought about the music part. But I guess if you do something long enough, it takes on some sort of a special character, I suppose. I mean, no matter what you do.
You never studied art then? You never took an art class?
No, but I did do drafting. I was doing drafting when I was 20 for the AT&T phone switching company. I used to draw switching systems and stuff like that, which requires, some pretty detailed and accurate work.
Yes.
So, but anyway.
That explains a lot, though, looking at your work.
Yeah, exactly. You get a little bit of that line stuff around. But it's hard for me to draw anything that looks realistic. And sometimes when I happen upon something that looks a little bit realistic, like a flower or something that's, I go, oh, hey, that looks like a real drawing.
Or the buildings. I love your buildings.
I couldn't really draw a person, or a face or anything like that. I don't know if that's required in art anyway, but still, it just means that I guess it's just a kind of art that I can only do.
Is this a time of your life where you're thinking, all right, I'm going to dedicate myself now to doing this? Or is this just one of those little chapters of all the zillions of things that you do in your life?
It is more of that. It's more like I've been doing it for a long, long time, probably since the 70s. And I've always never, like I said before, I always kept it, in a folder or kept it somewhere, but never really thought about ever putting it out or anything like that. I just kept it because it took some work to do it. But, for me, it's almost, I do it kind of all the time simultaneously with It's when I'm thinking, or it's when I'm, most of those drawings are just what I'm, it's sort of like when you're dreaming away, or you're just thinking, or you're just pondering, or whatever. I guess those are the kind of a way to put it down on paper or something. But I don't go, oh, I've got to draw this, or I have to go draw something. I think I just kind of constantly do it.
Have you seen any of Jimi Hendrix's pieces?
No, I actually haven't.
Did
you do some good drawings?
Yeah, but the thing is, when I read your quote about how your main medium is drawing on paper, mostly with colored markers, I have a piece that's a print of his, and it looks like it must have started as a bong. Like, it was a sort of shape like that.
Probably.
But it's doodling. It's these beautiful doodles that are the colors, and you can tell it that's what he did, but it's extraordinary. And I never really knew he did it. And I was at a charity event and saw this, and I was like, I have to have that drawing.
That's
it's just, so you need to look for it, because the colors are what reminded me of it with your work.
I love colors, and I do buy specific things, like, to make, you know, I do use Japanese markers and all kinds of funny kinds of pens that you wouldn't find in, it's hard to find kind of pens.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And sometimes brushes. I mean, actually, sometimes canvases with acrylics. Those take much more time, canvases with acrylics. Yeah, they're much more time consuming. But I do those too, so there's a lot of different techniques you can do.
How did you get into using, you know, these Japanese pens and stuff? Like, where did you see it or hear about it that you thought, oh, this is something I want to work with or try applying?
I just going to art supply stores and seeing, you know, pen displays and then just trying them out. I like the Japanese ones because they have a sort of a brush tip rather than like a hard tip. Mm-hmm. You know, they're almost like a paintbrush with ink in it, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
Already pre-inked. Mm-hmm. And then there's certain pens. It's funny how you get into, like, the things you use. Yeah, just certain pens that I like, the way they flow. And I also get down to what kind of paper it is, because some papers take ink better or take colors better.
Right.
Yeah, usually it's just ongoing all the time. I mean, if I just keep books, you know, I'm just always in the books doing that.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not doing something more serious.
Your mixed media stuff with the photographs, because you actually had a book out, a handful of years ago or a little more.
Yeah.
With your poetry and photographs,
too.
Yeah,
the lyrics and prose.
Yes.
Yeah, I actually, photographs are also a huge part of things I do. And I do a lot of, I've been, you know, shooting photographs ever since I was a kid. I used to develop photographs when I was a kid.
Oh, that's great.
And then I really got into, I was really into Polaroid for a bunch of years, to a point of where I used to buy 35mm Polaroid film and shoot it with the red filters and do all this stuff. So I really know pretty much about photography. And I do carry them around. It's funny, I have to say that when the cars were on tour, I don't know why, but I never really took a camera with me.
Oh,
that would have been good.
I had a Polaroid, but I didn't have any real cameras. And I think I was too busy to even think about it.
I'll bet you're right, yeah.
But I know that we used to, like, a lot of guys in the band had Polaroids, and we used to take Polaroids and tape them on each other's, hotel rooms. Stuff, like a picture of a fly on an egg, you know, or something weird, you know.
I love that.
I'm sure at some point you must have paid a photographer a lot of money to be taking pictures of you guys on tour instead.
Yeah, I know. It's true. And we never really, like, you know, did ourselves too much. So I regret not doing that when we were on tour. But there was plenty of pictures of us anyway. We didn't need more. That's for sure.
How did, when the video age struck, you would think of the Cars as a very artistic band anyway, just the album covers. I can remember just so well buying that first album and just how cool and artistic and poppy it was. Tell me about when the video, MTV, what it did for the Cars and you with your art, because there were some crazy videos you guys did.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah, that all worked out pretty well. I mean, considering, like, we were there when videos were basically starting. And before even MTV, we did a couple of videos of us playing, live. I guess mostly for Europe or for England, for Pop of the Pops. Sometimes they would want videos. Mm-hmm. And this is before MTV, so we did a couple for Europe. And then when MTV came, they were going, we need video. They were calling our manager, begging them for any kind of material that we had, you know, that we could show, they could show, because they didn't have very much. so it was, we were lucky to be like right in the beginning when they really needed it. But we also went through a period of not thinking videos were good to do. In the very beginning, we didn't want to do any because we felt like to make up some storyline and put it with the song would change like what people thought of the song. So we didn't quite know how to approach it. And I think in the beginning, it was mostly all live because then you can't really screw up what it means.
Right.
But then as soon as you start getting into something like You Might Think, you know, that was like took a lot of like, I don't know, persuasion to get us to do that. But they did such a great job when it was done. I thought, well, that looks pretty good. You know, that's pretty
good. Still to this day, yeah, it's so shockingly great.
Yeah, so it worked out that, you know, we just sort of said, okay, well, this is, you know, this medium's pretty good. We'll see. And some of them are really good and some of them are not so good. But whatever. You know, that's the way it works out.
Well, humor, too, goes a long way, I think. And you can tell that there was a lot of humor in those.
Well, and you also, Andy Warhol worked with you guys on the Hello Again video, right?
Yeah, he did, definitely.
And you have a great photograph of him that's part of your artwork.
And it seems as if your artwork also has a lot of influence, you know, that pop art thing. Did you guys ever talk art when you were together?
Yeah, well, Andy was kind of a pretty good friend of mine over time. And I used to go over to the factory all the time and look at his stuff. You know, he was always, you know, he painted every single day. I mean, you wouldn't think so. I don't know what you hear about his work, but he's definitely a hands-on artist. And, you know, I liked it. Everything he ever did, I liked it. I liked his idea. I liked his philosophy and just the general idea of how he approached art and what art means. And I can see the reasons that he did it that way. So, yeah, we never really talked art. But Andy was kind of a quiet talker, but he had a lot to say. Mm-hmm. He didn't talk much about art, actually. He talked about life and people and gossip and kind of stuff like that, you know. But he kept the art scene going, you know, in New York City.
And oh, yeah.
He was always hanging out with brand new artists. And if you saw Andy with an artist at a table eating dinner somewhere, that artist was probably going to get noticed, you know, later. And then when Andy died, the whole art scene, like, just went nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no more new artists. There was no more. He sort of, like, was a patron of the arts as well.
That's very interesting and sad, actually, to hear. Yeah.
I know, because you'd think that would sustain itself in a city like New York, but it's true, without anybody there to shepherd it.
Yeah, exactly, because it's a quiet scene. The art
right.
scene.
Well, you know, you've talked about drawing as almost meditative, and I was curious, do you listen to music when you draw, and do you have a certain spot in your apartment or your home where you do it?
No, I don't listen to music when I do it. I could do it, you know, in an airplane or a car or just sitting around. No, but I said meditative. Yeah, I just mean, okay, so if I'm having a quiet time and I'm kind of like thinking stuff or just overwhelmed with some kind of stuff, I might just have paper in front of me and be kind of just drawing, you know, and I guess whatever I'm thinking about constitutes whatever comes out, whatever goes onto the paper. And if it takes more than a day, you know, I can do it while I'm on the phone. I do a lot of them while I'm on the phone.
Wow.
Or at least start them. Although I haven't started any with you guys yet.
Oh, I was going to say, come on. We'll come out and see it on Saturday.
I may very well, yeah. And so it just comes spontaneously. And, you know, I can be interrupted on that, whereas in music I probably couldn't be interrupted too easily. You know, I could get up and change and then go back to stuff later. And so some things have more than one zen out thing, you know, and some are quicker.
It's got to be a lot different. Your art thing is a very solo thing. Let's talk about your band. That was so amazing. We were so happy to see you inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame so belatedly.
Yeah.
That was like, what the hell's wrong with them? But it was a thrilling night, really. I think that was the sole thing I was looking forward to, was to see you inducted. Tell me a little bit about that night.
Yeah, it was really quite great that we were fun. You know, I'm glad we did get inducted. It was kind of weird because, you know, we obviously hadn't played for a while.
Right.
A good while. And just the shock of, hey, you're going to play. And, you know, David was like, David has an art gallery, and you know, up in Gloucester, Massachusetts. And I don't think he had played drums for 5-8 years. I don't know. And he said, I have to get the drums out to his storage. And everybody, and we thought it was going to be kind of pretty hard. But we went to Cleveland, I guess, a few days, 4 or 5 days before the gig, and we rehearsed there. It was like we just played yesterday.
Oh, you're kidding.
I can't believe how it just, like, falls in. The only thing, obviously, missing was Ben not being there, which was very strange. But we had done, we did a little tour for a move like this, but then we didn't have Ben. But we didn't have any bass player at all. We used Craig, and he played it on keyboards or programmed it. But when we did this, we thought we needed one, so we got Scott Schreiner from Weezer to do the bass, because I knew he was a good singer. He'd be good for backups and bass.
So
it was fun to have him. And it all worked out pretty nice. I mean, I don't know. It was like quite a night. So it was kind of thrilling.
For the fans, it was very thrilling. I just have to give you a little aside here that Ben spent time in Atlanta at the end of his life, and I got to know him through some other musician friends that he was playing with at the time. I remember he was with Big People. And
yeah, that's right.
Liberty DeVito. Yeah. And
he was in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So he was also in Austin for a while, but...
Yeah, this is where he fell in love with a girl, and his life was going really well, and it was devastating, just devastating. And I got to spend time with him, you know, to get to know him a little bit. What a sweet person.
Yeah, he was very sweet. He was very, we were extremely close for so many years.
So long.
We were like 19 or something, and then every band we ever had or every musical thing that we ever did was always, he was always, you know, it was always him and I. And so it was a kind of funny life, and we went through a lot of different things,
I look back at your bio, I was just trying to kind of study up a little bit, but I was like, holy cow, I can't believe how many bands you were in before the Cars.
And
the names were great. But the fact that you were with Ben most of the time, I just thought that's very special. And he always had lovely things to say about you. But I can't even imagine what that must have felt like having him not there with you, but I'm sure in spirit at the induction ceremony.
Yeah, most certainly. That was definitely.
Did it mean something that it was in Cleveland too? I mean, just by fact that that's where you were. Tell me.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it meant something. Well, I lived in Cleveland for a while too.
Yeah.
And then Ben, obviously, that's where I didn't meet him there. I met him in Columbus, but I had been to his house in Cleveland and all that, you know, and I knew all about his teen band, the Grasshoppers.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that song. You know, You Came Into My Life was one of my favorite songs.
Oh, that's cool.
It's funny that I met him years, you know, he was like 15 then, I guess, and then I met him in Columbus, Ohio. He was booking bands. He was like a booking agent. And he said, I can play guitar and sing. And I said, really? He said, you know, you should come over to the house, you know, and check it out. And he came over and he played acoustic guitar and he sang Yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, you got to be kidding me. Is that really your voice? That voice is unbelievable. Or you should join the band. And he said, okay. And the next day, he was in it.
Oh.
And we were, like, practicing with him. And he had to get equipment. Well, first, he didn't even play an instrument for a while. I mean, he could play almost every instrument. But when he started off, he was just a singer. And then he started playing extra keyboards a little bit and then eventually gravitated to bass. It was almost like whatever instrument you needed, Ben could play.
Oh, isn't that cool?
If you needed a drummer, he'd play that. Or if you needed a keyboard, he'd play that. But he just had the most beautiful voice and presence. And he's a very beautiful person, beautiful guy, very good looking.
Yes, but and also when you meet somebody like that you love their music so much, I thought this guy I'm sure is going to be a jerk. Like even talking to you, I'm just like, wow, you're just so easy to talk to. You know, you're just never sure when it's somebody that you like that much. And I thought he was really a terrific guy. And I'm curious too, because my family's from Marblehead, Mass. How did you guys go from Cleveland to Boston? Because I know that radio in Boston actually helped you guys get your first kind of kick, right?
Yeah, they did. Well, Ben and I were in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and we had a band there called Leatherwood, it wasn't very long we were there. We were there for about 4 or 5 months, and we stayed in Ann Arbor and played with, actually, we opened for the MC5 and Iggy.
Oh, wow.
So that was an outdoor gig. So
that was a big deal for you, I'm sure. That's cool.
Well, for us, we thought we were like, you know, with the superstars.
Yeah.
And then we just, you know, we didn't have, the band was not sturdy. So we went to Boston because it was, partly because I thought they had a pretty good folk scene. And we could play acoustically in a lot of the places there, just him and I.
Ah.
And so we went there to do that. And we did do that for probably a year and a half. We were playing pretty frequently in these little clubs, these little acoustic clubs, and playing their own songs and everything. And then we started a band in Boston. Actually, let's see, one, two. Well, we had Milkwood.
Milkwood.
And then we had Richard and the Rabbits. And then we had Captain Swing. And then the Cars. And all those bands had one or more of the Cars in it. Until we just coagulated everything into us five. And and WBCN loved it. They heard our demos, and Max Anderson heard our demos and started playing those on the radio. And that was a big station.
Yes.
And they were just, you know, they were free to play what they wanted. And they actually really, if it wasn't for them, I don't know. We were doing really well in the clubs, but I think that's why the radio station wanted to play. So, because we were drawing a lot of people. And it was really shocking to us that we were drawing a lot of people, because it was the first band where there was like lines around the block and we were going, what the hell's going on? You know, what are we doing right? Better not change anything.
That's right.
And then, you know, once they started playing that, then the record companies started coming in like, droves.
Well, you did so much right, especially being yourselves. The thing is, I can't even think of another band that's, well, I'm sure there are that if I really thought, but you were your own band, that nobody sounded anything like you. You just came around at just the right time. Everybody liked to call it new wave or whatever, but I was like, no, this is just as...
Yeah, I know. We thought that was funny, too.
It really, really wonderful. And we're both big fans.
Are you still working on another solo compilation?
Yeah, I am. I have an anthology thing. It's going to be, we're shooting for spring. But yeah, I wanted to do stuff from the solo albums. And then I wanted to put about an extra 10 or 15 songs on it that had never been out, never been released. But they could be more like on the homebrew side. But I think they're cool things. So I just thought it would be a waste not to have them on something, you know, these days, because you can put as much stuff as you want on something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, when you get around to doing that, and then, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if I didn't eventually come up with another album, but only because I think you just don't stop doing it.
Right.
But I've certainly taken enough time between them.
Yes, you have.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. It's just like getting sidetracked on life, I guess.
Yeah, but that's a good thing.
At this time, and I did a lot of work, so. Yeah.
And you don't enjoy touring, correct? You're, that's like for you. Is this?
Well, I don't now. No, I don't. I don't anymore. I know it's odd to say. I mean, some people like live on touring.
Yeah, I know it.
Well, when it first touring, I loved it. You know, it was great with the Cars. But even when we were touring with the Cars, it was always, we'll tour and, you know, we'll be out there for 8 months, and then you have about a month to write all the songs for the next album.
Right.
And
right.
I'm like, what? You know, I couldn't. The thing was like, I mean, it's much harder writing songs than playing them.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that was conflicting for me. And whereas really, what I really feel most like is a songwriter rather than a performer.
Oh, wow.
You know, even though I performed my whole life, I never really thought about being out in the front and doing that. That was great, being out in the front. And, you know, I was happy to be on the side. And so I just had more of I cared more about what we've been talking about, art and music and writing, making things, just doing things that are different and not worried so much about playing the songs all the time, the same on stage.
Yes, that's
good. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
But I think people, well, you know, every musician has a different thing that they do best, and I think people love the tour. And it's great, and people love to see it, and I don't mind it. I like it a lot, but I just don't want to spend months out there.
Well, I think the fact that we can see you now. What's the weirdest thing that's happened with any listener or person that's come out to any of these art things? Have there been any good stories for you, or you're just like, oh, my gosh?
No, it's kind of odd in a way, because I go to these galleries and meet people who are coming. And it's weird. It's like Polaroids and chicken fingers, which we used to call, you know, those backstage things after the gig. Yes. You know, and then you're meeting. It's nice to meet people, but it's like, you know, you get put into a room to meet people.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly the most sociable. I'm sort of like an anti-social extrovert. You know? So it's like hard to go in and be like a smiley guy, but I guess I kind of do it.
I know. Well, that's right. where I was saying when I first heard your voice when we were talking to you, I was like, he sounds like he's happy. This is great.
I was, yeah, I know. I'm just making it all up.
Yeah, there you go. That's even better.
A little bit of a performer in you still, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, this has been such a treat for us. We're both going to be there, so we hope to see you.
Are you really? Oh, it's going to be so good to see you.
Yes, you too. But we are happy to help get people to see your art and hopefully have a chance to meet you. You're just so special to us. So thank you for taking so much time out for us.
Thanks for having me, and I'm happy to see you there.
We'll see you Saturday.
Thanks, Rick.
All right. Bye, girls. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.